Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Happy New Year, Judy.
Happy New Year, Mike.
You're back from your... From the motherland. Your patria. Your o patria.
It was a pretty crazy... It wasn't that crazy a trip. We spent a lot of time driving. But yeah, it was nice to be in Ireland where...
Drinking and driving.
I didn't even have Guinness while I was in Ireland. Isn't that lame?
That's crazy.
But it was...
Did you try the whiskey? I've heard it's quite good.
I don't like whiskey. I'm a bad Irish.
No Guinness. What kind of Mick are you?
I'm a Mick who likes Italian wine.
Well, today you're a Mick surrounded by Jews.
Well, you know, being surrounded by Jews is a thing for me.
You know,
I had a client call me yesterday who's Jewish to ask if it was okay for me to work on Yom Kippur, and I was like, yeah, oy. I think it's okay.
But it's a shanda that she's working on Yom Kippur. Hey, whatever happened to the Sandy Koufaxes and the Hank Greenbergs, you know? These people who, you know, these great athletes. Were, I mean, yesterday my brother, who left shul to go watch a football game, and he left me a message, and then I called him back. He goes, I can't talk to you. I'm watching football. I just got back from synagogue, and I'm having a tough time fasting while I watch football.
Well, it's nachos. I mean, like, are nachos kosher?
But seriously, I think, remember Sean Green, Dan? Yes. Rabbi Dan Bronstein, yes, joining us today? Remember Sean Green? I think he was the last guy to, like, sort of make
right.
a statement
right.
of
right.
not playing baseball on Yom Kippur during right. the playoffs. And I don't think it was a big deal for him because he had played like 400 games in a row. He was a real right. Iron Man, a real Lou Gehrig kind of guy. And
well, it's an old theme, you know. It's like the original Jazz Singer. I don't know about the other movies, the other iterations of it, but the original with Al Jolson, the whole conflict about whether he's supposed to, whether he's allowed to do jazz during Yom Kippur, and his father wants him to chant Kol Nidre. So it's an old theme in American Jewish life.
Well, you're singing the jazz version of Kol Nidre.
Right,
and
right.
There we go. Anyway, we're joined today by our old friend, Rabbi Dan Bronstein, my good buddy.
Good
to see
evening.
You, Dan, always. We didn't spend enough time together in 57, 74. Hopefully this year
that's
will,
right.
will be better.
Shana haba.
A happy New Year to you.
Yes.
And our very own Sarah Kamen, who is going to come on a little later after us to host The Morning After. And she also writes for Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan. And also, like Rabbi Dan, from a rabbi family.
Indeed. Happy to be here.
The product of Jew Camp.
We just bonded.
We bonded over our Jew Camp experiences.
Right.
So it's nice that rabbis can marry and have kids. I mean, I grew up Catholic.
Yeah, it's not like that.
Yeah.
Well, Catholics can marry and have kids.
It's the first commandment is to multiply, mm-hmm. is to reproduce, the first commandment of the Bible.
That's why Jew Camp exists.
That's right. That's true,
oh, so
actually.
It's actually true. It's like band camp in that fashion.
Yeah.
It's to get nice Jewish boys and girls together. I mean,
oh.
it's really,
yeah,
that's
we're,
really
we're
true.
We're all about procreation.
Right.
Or we're procreation in general.
Right.
But Dan, you only have one kid.
Well, that's a whole other topic. I think that people prefer their rabbis to be married and have kids. If you don't pass a certain age, you'll look weird to the community.
Right, but I mean, Catholic priests obviously are supposed
right,
to be celibate,
right, right.
but other Christian denominations,
right,
I mean,
right.
have, you know, the pastors and the
right.
leaders of the church always have large families.
Right, right.
I'm very happy I was born. Personally.
So are we.
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Do you think having rabbinical dads was like harder for you, or did you have to live up to a certain code rather than like your friends did?
It was hard, yeah. Especially, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, Rabbi Dan, but going to a temple was really hard because I had to go to Sunday school, which was like Jew school.
Well, I went to Hebrew school.
Yeah.
I mean, I was bar mitzvah. I mean,
yeah.
And it was no fun, I'll be honest
well,
with you.
Well, the teachers always expected me to know the answer. And so they would just, you know, they would call on me even if I didn't raise my hand.
Like Jew school Jeopardy.
Yeah. And I would get really mad because it's like, just because I'm the rabbi's dad doesn't, or my dad's the rabbi doesn't mean I have to be, you know, I know the answer every time.
I know all your baguettes.
I found it pretty awful at certain points.
Yeah, I don't think any...
Especially junior high, high school was terrible.
Yeah. And a lot of the kids from my high school went to our temple. So like none of the boys would go out with me because it's like, well, who wants to deal with like the rabbi dad?
Right. And either, you know, you're trying to live up to a certain standards or... You act like your peers, and you're suddenly framed as a degenerate in certain ways.
It was tough. Well,
the self-loathing Jew is such a myth and legend, but why is it we're so fucking miserable? I mean, listen to you guys.
We come from a long history of it.
I don't know. I think it's, you know, I think we admit we're miserable, unlike other religious traditions. So, and I think we're actually better off that way.
Well, I think misery loves company.
Yes.
And then... We're inherently funny, so that cultivates humor.
We're inherently funny.
Yes, yes.
We are funny people. Well, that's what kept us alive for all those years in the desert.
Yes. It is. It's a great weapon, humor.
Uh-huh.
Jews are funny.
Why do you think Jews and Catholics both are gifted with the guilt? I mean, we are the two guiltiest religions, I would
say. You know,
say.
That's what they say about Jews, but I know plenty of Jews who are guilt-free.
I don't do guilt, personally. I try not to.
And I think it's what type of, you know, guilt without, if you don't use the guilt in a productive way, then it's totally useless. Well, if you're just mired down in guilt and don't take that guilt as a stepping stone to make changes, then... What's the point? So I'm not answering a question because I can't speak about Catholics.
Well, we have the original sin.
Right. We don't have that.
We start with that. So.
Right. So we don't have that.
But Catholic school does teach you to use the guilt effectively.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
Well, my mother was like a black belt when it came to guilt. Yeah. I mean, she was like the 33rd degree mason of guilt.
Right, right.
And
a ninja.
Are you kidding? She was the absolute apogee of Jewish guilt. I mean, the Wayne Gretzky of guilt, you know, was after she died, she left letters, notes for me and my two brothers, and one that she sent to my brother said, "You and your children didn't visit me enough when I was alive."
Yeah, see, I would say
wow.
That's not an effective use of guilt.
Yeah.
Well, it's too late now.
It seems more like, I think for Judaism, it's more of like a tactic or like a something that mothers can put in their back pocket.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this is really dark and unhappy. I don't know. I think it should be, you know, I hate to sound, you know,
what, positive?
All happy and positive because I'm not that way at all. But, you know, you can use it as a fulcrum to, you know, actually change things for the better. And that's, you know, and then that's a big part of the holidays right now.
So atoning on, okay, I'm obviously not well-versed
right.
in the Jewish holidays. What is this business with atoning and Yom Kippur, and how is that? Rosh Hashanah is like Happy New Year. That's a happy holiday, mm-hmm. followed quickly by Yom Kippur, which is kind of a solemn holiday,
yes.
right?
Rosh Hashanah is solemn, too. So the whole process actually begins the month before Rosh Hashanah, the month Hebrew month of Elul, and you're supposed to start preparing for this process that you're going to go into. Rosh Hashanah, as you said, it is happy. You have apples and honey. It's sweet. But it's also solemn. You're entering into this new phase. And I think the point, just to cut to the chase here, is to take an honest look at your life, but then, you know, take that a whole other step. And there's this idea that before the end of Yom Kippur, you're supposed to go out there and ask people for forgiveness who you've wronged, or accept people's apologies. Both of those are really hard to do, depending on the individual.
Forgiveness is very difficult.
Yeah, and you know, it's the tradition says, you know, God will forgive you, but you have to actually go out to other human beings. God is the easy part. You know, right. You can say you're sorry to God.
In your head.
And right, yeah. But going and actually changing your relationships, that's tough.
Did you apologize to anyone yesterday?
Yeah, yeah. I also heard a friend who totally doesn't get it. I didn't do anything wrong last year.
Oh, wow.
Are you kidding? For me, Yom Kippur should come quarterly.
I mean, it's the same person who told me once that he doesn't fast on Yom Kippur because he's not comfortable with it. I was like, well, no one's comfortable
with
it.
Isn't that the point?
That's the whole point.
The whole concept of a bagel, you know, and lox Jew.
So that's a person who really doesn't get it. You know, everybody messes up constantly.
Do you have to forgive? Like, if someone comes to you and they really wronged you, and then...
You know, you don't... I mean, you don't have to. The person who is asking forgiveness has to approach you three times. But, you know, ideally you would. But I would be the first person to say that there's some things which might be unforgivable.
Good. I totally agree. I think forgiveness is overrated sometimes.
Well, that was always my problem.
Being big is overrated.
Yeah.
And you're talking about real forgiveness, like moving on. Like, you know, sometimes you can say you're sorry to a person and that person will be like, okay, but they keep on berating you for something that you did. And you're like, well, didn't we talk about this? So forgiveness means forgiveness. It's setting a new slate.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think people ask for forgiveness just to sort of help their own egos. They're not,
oh, sure.
You know, they're not really sorry. It's like in AA, you know, the fourth step. You like go and, you know, correct your wrongs as long as that doesn't make it worse for someone else. Like you can't say like, you know, I cheated, you know, I cheated with your husband and, you know, that screws up their relationship and they didn't know and wreaks havoc.
Yeah, it's and there's so many false, you know, in our culture and maybe in other cultures too, about these false apologies.
Yeah.
You know, there's always like, well, if I inadvertently offended you, you know.
I'm sorry that you feel that way.
By killing your children and setting your house on fire, then I'm sorry.
It's like the all due respect gambit.
Yes, right.
Well, Dan, with all due respect, I'm not allowed to finish that sentence. You're a complete cunt.
Yeah.
You know, just to play devil's advocate.
I don't get, you know.
Yes. There's so many people.
A free ride.
I would like to say that
I'm
to so many people.
I'm only saying this because I love you, but you're an idiot.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work like that. You don't.
At least I was honest.
There's also the way you say it, though. It's like, well, I'm sorry that you were hurt by my words.
Right.
I'm sorry that you were so small-minded.
Exactly. I'm sorry that you're so sensitive that you took what I said and misconstrued it to be hurtful.
No, like 15 years ago or so, or 20 years ago, whenever it was, somebody broke up with me online. And then they were
so ahead of their time.
They were apologizing, like, "Well, sorry, I made you." So it was exactly what you're talking about.
Well, can I use a personal example?
Please.
Of course.
I actually got a text this morning from kind of an old boyfriend sort of person who had hurt me a lot a few months ago. And I had been very explicit about the fact that he had hurt me and he had never apologized because he didn't understand. He was confused about why I would be hurt. So I got a text this morning that said, if my words hurt you, I am sorry. And I was like, if? Like, you're still not sure?
And so, why is he still thinking about it? He knows
because
he was
it's
in the
Yom Kippur.
Oh, so he's all better now.
It's like, too late, dude. Like, just because it's Yom Kippur doesn't mean
Yom Kippur doesn't work like confession.
Yeah, it's not confession.
Right? It's not like, you know, I mean, you Catholics are great, you guys.
Oh, yeah, I'm always at confession. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 40 years since my last confession.
You know how to do 400,000 Hail Marys.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to be, you know, part of the traditional Jewish services every day of the week, not just on holidays or the Sabbath. You're supposed to be, you're asking for forgiveness. So it's like a never ending. People are, you know, the idea is that you're screwing up all the time and you need to acknowledge that.
But you don't have like, I mean, I could go confess that I murdered somebody and they'll give me like some like time consuming penance, I'm assuming.
Right. But we don't have that. I'm like, okay, watch at least two Marx Brothers movies,
right.
And you're home
and
free.
You're good. And you guys, do you have hell or not?
No,
not really. No, I mean, there's different sort of parables about hell, but it's not like an actual.
But we don't necessarily have. I mean, it's just not as tangible.
And it's not the heaven and hell. It's really about this world.
We don't really talk about it.
I mean, there's an idea. You know, this is typically rabbinic. You know, the rabbis in one story sort of sketch out heaven, what it would be like, and basically it's studying all day and going to buffets.
Wait, which one was that, heaven or hell? I can't.
That's heaven.
Oh my god!
So you know, it's not like really
cool.
Like
hell.
It's just heaven is hell.
I mean, I would love it. I would love studying all the day and eating and going to buffets. But it's not like the Vikings.
I
you know,
love
where
it's buffet.
You get to fight and
what kind of buffet?
Well, on the
old country buffet. You know, like, or are we talking about like sushi buffet?
No, like Leviathan, these beasts that you talk about in the Book of Genesis in the very beginning.
I want specifics before I agree. To
right,
that.
Right. So
I'll start sinning.
Anyways, not really to answer your question. It's not really like a heaven hell thing. It's about focusing on your behavior here and now.
So it is more
But I think it's important that you brought up the Jewish concept of the afterlife because it's something that most people don't understand. Obviously, we don't use, you know, heaven and hell. It's like hell is some sort of like long shadow of threat. This is what's going to happen to you.
Right.
You know,
you're going to go to
if
hell.
You're mean to your sister. If you masturbate, you know, you know, if you lay down with another man.
Right, right. Well, that's a whole other topic.
To hell.
You know, that's
if you confess, you know.
Right, right, you're right. I mean,
yeah, but if you fast one day out of the year, you're good.
Well, right. Yeah, it doesn't really work that way. I love the story you were telling before. You were in a Park Slope synagogue.
Yes.
Okay, when someone actually had to say, "Is there a doctor in the house?"
So that was,
and,
yeah,
and
that
was, there was a rush to the stage.
It was a relative of mine who we thought might be having a heart attack.
Oh, I thought it was my mom trying to find me a husband.
That's a good tactic.
Well, then she could say, of course, not a doctor, an accountant, right?
Lawyer.
Dad, or lawyer, right? No, be a lawyer, right? It'd be doctor, lawyer, accountant. That's the hierarchy.
I think accountant's kind of down there, though.
Yeah.
Number three, yeah. I mean, maybe dentist.
Banker.
I don't know.
Dentist. Nice Jew banker.
Banker, okay.
You know, hedge fund.
Hedge fund, right. Okay, yeah. Hedge fund, right.
Or like
right.
Investment.
Right,
banker,
you're right. You're right. I stand corrected.
No. I would say my brother, the Wall Street mocker.
Yes, right, right. It's, it was actually.
Be a big mocker, either way.
This literally happened where, like, you know, it was their doctor and like 10 guys surrounded my relative and they had to figure out, you know, who was the best, you know, because there were a couple of pediatricians. So they were sort of whisked away because we thought it might be a heart attack. And it was like, you know, thank goodness this isn't, fill in the blank type of church, you know. There's a plenty supply of medical people here, so.
Why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think that Jews are drawn to these, like, not Mike, obviously.
Mike, the failed law position in college dropout.
But you can go to a synagogue, and, like, you go to a church, maybe there's a doctor, like a Catholic church.
Right.
There's probably going to be more, like, you know. Accountants, middle managers.
There's actually a history of, I can't remember the name, of course, a history of Jews in medicine, but it's long been considered to be this very noble profession, and probably the greatest Jew of the last 1,000 years, Maimonides, was a rabbi and a doctor and a scientist and a philosopher, and so he's sort of like the guy everybody looks up to from no matter what part of the Jewish world you're from, and he... He did it all. He was a rabbi, and he was healing people.
And they named a hospital after
him. Named a hospital after him, right. So
I don't think it's such a great hospital, though, is it?
I've never...
Sorry, I've been making the rounds of hospitals lately.
Well, we agree on Sinai, though, right?
Yes, we agree on Sinai.
My son was born at Sinai and did a great job.
So Jewish, you guys. It's like yelping hospitals.
Yeah, talking about hospitals, right. That's true.
It's true. You know, it's like all my jokes start
with...
What
a cliche.
So a guy goes to a doctor, and Jewish jokes start with a guy goes into a bar.
Yeah, right, right.
All right, why don't we take a break? And Dan, you picked out the song today. And it's not particularly a Jewish song, but we're talking about what's going to be our Yom Kippur song, and you went with the Sex Pistols.
Yes, I thought the song Pretty Vacant, because the High Holidays are about getting you out of that pretty vacant mental territory.
All right, let's go with it. You listen to Arts and Seizures here on the Heritage Radio Network.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And we're back.
That was a pretty low-key bumper for Brandon. Like, where's the super awesome?
Well, we are super awesome back at Arts and Seizures with Rabbi Dan Brownstein and our friend and colleague, Sari Kamen. Stay tuned. She's going to be on right after us with her show The Morning After.
Thank you.
And you've been writing about Jew food lately for Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan.
That's correct.
Yes, that's and talking about, did you guys have a good spread for the breakfast? You guys' bagels and locks it up. You guys have nice herring and fish.
Yeah,
and
basically.
I did some Thai food.
That sounds much better, actually.
How old would your father, the rabbi, think about that?
I think he likes Thai food.
Oh, okay.
I thought Chinese food was like the Jewish food.
That's more of a Christmas.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right.
It's Sunday nights. We like our Sunday night Chinese food.
I like Chinese food any night.
Why do Jews love Chinese food so much? Why is that?
There is actually a reason.
Tell us more.
Well, please.
Well, actually, I wrote a paper about it in school. Wow.
I'm curious.
No. Okay. Well, I guess around the end of... like the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, there was sort of a mass immigration of both Jews and Chinese food, and they land both Jews and Chinese people, and they kind of landed in the Lower East Side at the same time. So they were both very, very poor communities living kind of on top of each other, and Jews didn't necessarily have a cuisine of their own to speak of. There's people coming from all different parts of Europe. And the Chinese people came and they started opening up restaurants, and Jews started eating there because it was one of the only kinds of restaurants they could afford to eat in.
Because ghetto Chinese food is cheap.
It's cheap. And there was also actually a lot of things that felt really familiar about it. Not an overwhelmingly spicy cuisine. It was mostly Cantonese, which is very mild. Mm. They were familiar with, you know, think about like the wonton kreplach similarities.
Well, every culture has its own dumpling, right?
Sure.
Right? The kreplachs and dumplings and pierogies.
The overcooked vegetables, the steamed carrots and the celeries and the onion, all of those things were familiar and yet exotic enough that it was actually appealing.
Well, all right.
Yeah. What about, it used to be more Christian establishments would close on Sundays.
Well, right. And, the other kind of dominant community living down there were the Italian Catholics, and they were not really interested in having the Jews and the Chinese people eat in their restaurants. They were pretty exclusive. So it was like, well, we could either eat our own food, which we're not, you know, we don't have. Which isn't so delicious. And there's not much of like an identity associated with it, or we could eat in these other places. So,
and this also begs the question: we're talking about the holidays, we're talking about Rosh Hashanah, but we're talking about Judaism, and now we're talking about the Jewish culture, which are not the same thing. I mean, the food is East European, and a lot of the places that we like in the East Village that serve pierogies and borscht, not really Jewish places, but we do think of it as sort of Jewish cuisine. You can't, you know, go anywhere and not get a potato latke. But, down the East Village, but they're not necessarily Jewish places.
Right.
But that's the cuisine that we adopt.
Exactly.
I didn't have any bagels and lox yesterday. I'm feeling bereft.
Maybe we can fix that.
Yeah.
Does Roberta's have bagels and lox?
No, but you know, I bet they would kill it, right?
They would so kill
it. You know, but Roberta's started making bagels and bialys. Did you know
they
that?
They kill everything they
touch. On the Roberta's To Go, their bialys are ass-kickingly good. The bagel was a little shaky, I'll be honest with you. But the bialy was astonishing. I got to say, I'm always shocked at how good the Fairway bagel is. Oh. Those people over at Fairway, the bakery, you know, their on-site bakery, they're doing something right there. They boil the bagels. They got it right. I mean, it's crispy on the outside. It's chewy on the inside. It's the real deal.
Well, they have a Jew in charge of their food over there.
And the only crime really is they're doing like wheat bagels and some of these things that I do not approve
of. That's not a crime.
Oh, that's bullshit. Come on, Sarah.
Not a crime.
A wheat bagel. It's like a blueberry bagel. What is a Sajo cheese?
Blueberry bagel.
I had a roommate.
Blueberry is
a Shonda.
I had a roommate.
Damn, it's a Shonda.
Blueberry is a Shonda.
I live with somebody.
Any kind of sweet bagel.
When I was at University of Wisconsin Madison in college, one of my roommates one year, wonderful woman, but she would take Lender's blueberry bagels.
Ugh.
And this gets really bad. And microwave them.
Oh. And I had a song at Jew Camp about Lender's bagels. It was like, la, la, Lender's bagels. It was a cheer.
Lender's bagels?
Well, when we lived in Rochester, they were the only bagels you could find for a long time. The bagel store did eventually open, but, you know, we had come from, northern New Jersey, and we lived in Queens, and then we go up to Rochester, which was like... It was a bagel desert.
That's sad.
For years, so we had to get used to Lender's bagels.
But Lender's,
you guys were bagel insecure.
They Americanized them. right? I mean, they
blenders, they're terrible, by the way.
No, but they made it like into a national, you know, thing, right? Also, I mean, everyone has Dunkin' Donuts has bagels and
rolls with holes. Bagel.
But that's how people are exposed to it.
Ugh, you know? It's like bread. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, okay.
It's like bread.
It's like, you know, it's not a bagel. It's bread. And it always bothered me that it was called Lender because that's like Shylock's bagels.
Now that would be
it always bothered
that
me.
That is a winning name. Of
I was
going to
say that'd be a great chain. And then yes. You're right. You would ask for like a. You know, like a half a cup of cream cheese.
That's what I was thinking.
And they give you like a quarter, you know.
Yeah, and then they cut off your hand.
And then charge you more for what you
eat. What was that deli that in Austin, Texas, it was like the Jewish deli, and it's, you know, and it said like New York food without the attitude. I'm like, fuck you, I came here for the attitude.
Why would
it doesn't taste
food?
As good if you don't give me a hard time.
Yeah.
I like that, Shylock's Bagels.
I like it. I would eat there.
I would definitely go there in a second.
Hey, you know, if the Jew fits.
Right.
So what is your favorite Jewish food? Mine is brisket.
Brisket's right up there with me, but kasher varnishka.
Also. Love the kasher.
But that's not, you know, as you were saying before, that's not only Eastern European too, right?
Right. So, I think the Jewish brisket, though, is like ruining it seems to be part of the tradition. You take a nice piece of meat and then you overcook it. You know, my mother, she'd like, you know, it's like this 50s mentality of cooking where you'd use like powdered onion soup mix and ketchup. It's like, so you're going to put a bunch of high fructose corn syrup and like MSG and that like Lipton's like powder. It's like, you know, this beautiful piece of brisket. You know, she didn't really go to a good butcher. She went to the supermarket and bought some crappy
meat. It's supposed to be crappy meat.
Well, brisket is a cheap cut. Brisket is a cheap cut.
My friend Sylvia taught me how to make a nice brisket.
A nice brisket. No, brisket can be wonderful.
Yeah, it can be the greatest.
You know, and that's, by the way, it's why your people love their corned beef as well.
I mean, my people turn a brisket into an atrocity.
You ughed with the best of them, I must say. Let me compliment you on your ugh.
And that huh.
It's so, all the dairy in here.
Speaking of food, we're going headlong into a lot of good eating holidays, and of course, Sukkot's coming up, but Hanukkah, it's going to be latke season soon.
That's right.
That's a good one.
You're going to come back. We had you last year for the holiday season.
I would love to come back.
You're going to come back and flip some latkes.
Right.
It was so interesting last year with that rare occurrence of the confluence of Thanksgiving and Hanukkah.
Oh, that was so weird. Oh, and everyone tried to make like a terlatka.
It was great. I had a great.
There was all these weird mashup. Like.
Right. It was a blast.
I like Thanksgiving because it's just eating. There's no no religion hanging over it. It's
there is a quasi religious. There's a moral message.
Well, I think
somewhere, right? I mean, it's a sort of civil religious thing.
A civil religious thing.
You talk about your gratitude for things for the year. That could be spiritual.
I hope those of us who are more enlightened remember to count our blessings more often than just on the turkey day and the football game
day. Absolutely.
You know, and we remember to drink beer in cans all the time.
Right.
which is really what Thanksgiving has become so much. You know, watch the game and drink beer out of cans.
Right.
Do you guys remember all the mashups that were happening? All the food mashups that were
incredible.
Taking place, though?
But I'll tell you what, why not potato latkes with your turkey? That's a perfect combination.
No, I know, but it was like the cronut version of it. I mean, those sound like nice accompaniments, but like there was things that people were baking that had like a latke in it and a turkey and like a pumpkin pie, like all in a ball.
But I hope it leads to a further revival of schmaltz.
That's good. And speaking of schmaltz, what's your website?
It's Honey and Schmaltz, actually.
I do like that segue.
That was a perfect segue.
You don't eat those together, though.
No, I mean, you could. You could do like a fritter. I forget, there's a name. There is something. Yeah, that can be cooked in schmaltz and honey, and it's kind of sweet, but then fried.
It's probably great.
That sounds good. Did you see, was it Sam Sifton? No, it was Pete Wells. Which one of the guys that just wrote that wonderful...
Oh, the Sammies?
The Sammies review.
And that's right.
The New York
amazing.
Times, like a review of Sammies Romanian, which is
I
like...
I still have never eaten
it.
I've got to go there.
It's just not a good restaurant, but it is like a bar mitzvah in progress
that's
when you go there.
Said. Yeah, he was like, it's an underground bar mitzvah that never ends.
And, you know, with big schmaltz on the table, like big, you know, containers.
Yeah, maple syrup jars, so you can just use it as a condiment as opposed to a frying ingredient.
It's like the Walt Disney Las Vegas version of Eastern European Jewish culture.
It is, yeah. Yes.
It is.
Fantastic.
It is the underground.
Yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily call it Vegas quality. Once again, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet today. Can you believe it? We dismissed Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Hanukkah, the Sex Pistols. We atoned for a lot of sins.
I feel better.
I feel lighter.
I feel much lighter.
Well, the pizza's coming.
Oh, that'll change.
Well, all right. Well, for Judy and Rabbi Dan Bronstein, and stay tuned for Sari Kamen. She's coming on the air shortly with The Morning After. And for Liz in the booth, It's Mike Edison and Arts and Seizures. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.